You're listening to the Nightlife Podcast with Indira Naidu. This is Eat Out In.
Miguel Maestre is a marvellous chef, a restaurateur, and very much a showman. Born in Murcia in the south of Spain, he worked for many years in some of the world's top kitchens. You probably know him from his TV appearances. He's a mainstay of The Living Room on Network 10 and has presented various specials on the network too. Well, Miguel recently released his fourth book, simply called Feast, 100 Generous Recipes to Share, and he's with us now for tonight's Eat Out In. Miguel, hello.
Thank you for having me, Michelle. I love introductions, and your introduction was beautiful.
Thank you.
I love when people say nice things about me.
Oh, well, there's only nice things to say. Now, as I did mention, you are a showman, and I've shared a few TV studios with you over the years, and I love the amount of energy that you can just push through a screen. How much do you enjoy the TV part of your work, Miguel?
Oh, I love it. I'd like to say thank you for having me on the show. And I remember when I was a chef that nobody knew very much, you were always really kind and nice to me on TV. When I used to come to do the spots on TV, you were always really lovely to me. So you never forget your beginnings. You were always, it's so true. You were always beautiful to me. And we always have a great chemistry when we went on a screen together.
Yeah.
But like, I love TV because, you know, I'm a chef that works in TV, and I always have this conversation with TV producers. I've never been a presenter, and I think that's the reason why I really enjoy it, because I've never, you know, got into the role of being a guy that works on TV. I just love the fact that being yourself on TV, people, you know, so many people can get to see you, and it's like being in a restaurant with 1 million people eating dinner instead of having a restaurant and feeding 30 people. Being on TV is like cooking dinner for 1 million people.
And I know, but really just scary. But you just saying that would stress a lot of people. Cooking dinner for 1 million people. Not everyone would want to do that.
Well, I just love it. I you know, the more the merrier. I love, you know, I love when the intro, when you said about the showman. Like, sometimes I even enjoy more being in a live show than being in TV, because I love spontaneity and I love things that just happen, and I love things that are in the moment, right here, right now. And that's for me. I thrive on people, and I thrive on that excitement, that energy from the moment. And that's why I think I really enjoy TV, because, you know, I know that in the other side of the camera, in that little behind the barrel, is all these little people in the house having dinner on Friday night. And that's so exciting.
Now, it takes a lot of energy to emit the sort of energy that you emit, Miguel. Do you have quiet times as well?
Oh, I wish I have quiet time. It's exhausting being myself. You know, my poor wife. I'll tell you, somebody that will tell you this will be Chris Brown. He gets exhausted when we go on trips together. He's like, Miguel, just being by your side is exhausting. Like, you know, I was born like this. I just was born really excited about things. And I do struggle to slow down. Like, sometimes my wife just will disconnect it for like 1 hour. And I say, Miguel, do you say something? And I'll be talking about 100 things, 100 miles per hour. I think the only people can really stand me is my children, because they're like really hyper like me. I think nobody else on set in the living room, the guys are so fun, always like, oh, Miguel, how you do this? Because Amanda will come from the radio talking for 3 hours, and I'll be so full on and say, Miguel, I just need a couple of minutes. And Barry will come from filming and say, oh, Miguel, I need a couple of minutes. And I go to Chris, and Chris is like, oh, Miguel, just need a couple of minutes. So I just start going for the cameraman and the producer.
No, it's good having your sort of energy, because you do need that energy to keep out the output of your television career, your food career. Let me ask you, Miguel, where did the food passion begin? Was it from your childhood? Did you come from a family that loved cooking and sharing food together?
Oh, you're going to love this answer. My mom comes from a family of 20 children. Yes, that is a true story. You don't watch that on TV, and obviously wasn't much TV happening then. And I'm telling you, this is like the loudest family in the world. My grandmother, Lola, Maria Dolores, had 20 kids. My mom, Florentina, is number five in the line. And all these children, you know, brought the kids to the farm on Sundays. And my upbringing was going every Sunday to my grandfather's place. And it'll be like food. And we were such a loud family. And I think that's where I'm, you know, just that's where I grew up. And that's what I know. And that's why I think I'm so loud. Because even apart from being Spanish, you know, that's why that life, that craziness come from, because that's how we've been brought up. And that was always around really delicious food. Always.
Yeah.
Always.
Wow.
And imagine 100 cousins. We couldn't go to a restaurant. We'll destroy the restaurant. It was like embarrassing having a family like mine.
Your family was the restaurant.
Yeah, well, this is what I mean. Imagine making a booking saying, oh, we're coming over for dinner. How many? 100. We're close. Oh, no, the maestres are coming. Close the restaurant.
No, it sounds wonderful, that passion, that togetherness, the joyfulness of a large family and sharing food. I can sort of understand now why you are the zany, you know, big personality that you are. But tell me, so from Spain, you actually moved on to Scotland, and that's where you learnt to speak English and where you, you know, got your food chops from. What did you learn from the Scots about food?
Oh, God, it's a random place to go, isn't it?
It is.
Spain, the Scotland. But, you know, the funniest thing is, like, I didn't speak any English when I was 18. I always knew inside my heart. I always was a really wild spirit. So my brothers, both of them, went to uni and studied amazing degrees. And then the guy in the middle, I always knew my heart belonged somewhere else. I always knew that I had to explore the world. And I left home when I was 18. I couldn't speak English. So I needed a place where I knew someone that could help me for the first days because I could not communicate. Mm. And in Scotland, in Edinburgh, we had a friend that was studying. So that's why I actually chose Edinburgh, because I could stay in my friend's third house. It was a lovely friend from Murcia, and she allowed me to stay there for 20 days until I could get my feet on the ground. I got no idea how I understood anything Scottish people were saying. Scottish people, they're so lively like Spanish.
I mean, look, Miguel, I speak English and often I can't understand what Scottish people are saying.
I know, and they get so excited because it's so cold. We drank so much beer and we have so much fun. And the thing is, you know, like within the first 6 months, and you're not going to believe this, I was really quiet because I didn't understand what nobody was saying. So I had to really, you know, when you just learn things from necessity,
yeah,
that's how you learn the best lessons in life. And you know, I slowly start to communicate. And the kitchen was a place where I belong. Like, I got the worst jobs in the world. I got peeling prawns and, you know, peeling the potatoes, washing the dishes. But I was so happy doing it. Like, that was the one place that I felt that I belong. You know, when you just feel somewhere, this is who I am. And that was the beginning of cooking in Scotland.
Yeah.
Cooking a lot of haggis. But I'll tell you something, it is amazing. Edinburgh, I'm talking about a long time ago, I'm 41. I went there when I was 18, 19. That's a long time ago. Edinburgh was one of the happening places in Europe, one of the places in Europe with the most restaurants and pubs. So the food scene was unbelievable. Like the restaurants, the chefs from all around the world, the level of cooking was fantastic.
Mm.
And that's how it started, to like slowly moving up. And
yeah. And do you like, know, haggis? Do you like haggis?
I love haggis. And my mother-in-law is Scottish. So, you know, we have a Scottish influence in the family. I love haggis. I love Scotch whiskey. And I love, I watch Braveheart a million times. So now I feel like sometimes if I watch Braveheart, I think I'm a Scottish myself. I like Sons of Scotland and William Wallace.
Well, Miguel, you're now an Australian citizen and your partner Sasha is Australian and you have a daughter and a son who were born here. But how strong is your link back to Spain still?
Oh, like, you know, it's funny, like, we're having this conversation because today is my anniversary of becoming an Australian 8 years later.
Oh, congratulations.
So it is fascinating how, like, you know, and I was thinking a little bit, like, you know, thinking and going through, like, all these amazing years, so how the link from Spain, my heart beats into a strong beat. So one of them says ole, and another one says hey. Yeah. So I'm a fully Australian person. I think I dream Australian. And so lucky to have an Australian family. My, you know, my world is Australia. It's the most beautiful. It's been so wonderful to me, this country, welcoming and making me a part of it. Mm. But, like, you know, my heart is still, you know, mom and daddy back at home. You know, like, you have that connection still of, you know, who you are. And the reason how I'm going to push that is to still teach my kids to speak Spanish. I'm trying to don't change how I speak. And really, sometimes some words escape in Spanish, you know. They say, hola, ¿cómo estás? And, and that kind of maintain the flame alive, because it's so much, in a heart, it's so much space for two countries.
Yeah.
You know, so you can share them both beautifully.
Well, you're still treasured by Spain. You received a very prominent award from them.
Yeah, wow. I know. I almost feel embarrassed when I talk about this. It's like, I got it's not many times the king of your country send you a letter and say, we're thinking to give you the order of Spain. I think the representation of the Spanish culture in Australian media is something I always loved, because I love to share. And it's like, you know, sharing is what I love to do most. And that's why the award came in. This award has been given to exceptional people, you know, doctors and architects and humanitarians, philosophers. So when I got told, I'm just a chef, you know, I'm not body that special. I'm just really a guy that chop onions and cook food and, you know, works in the living room. I'm not really that exciting. So when, you know, we got awarded, it's only three other chefs in the story of my country have been awarded this award. And, you know, it was very special. And the other three chefs, they're much better chefs than me. You know, they're the idols I always look up to. So to be amongst these people in this, yeah, well, I remember my dad running around my whole city, you know, to tell all my teachers from school, you would not believe Miguel is getting the Order of Spain. And nobody could believe it. And I was like, my mom and dad is so proud of it. And we were all so proud. We went to Canberra, and, you know, the consul of it is pretty, like, and this colonel of the force was giving with the, it was the full, like, pretty amazing. I got emotional. I didn't know what to say. For the first time, I was lost for a while.
Yeah, congratulations. Yes, the Order of Civil Merits. It is indeed a wonderful honour. Miguel Maestre is with me, the chef and restaurateur and wonderful showman, talking about his Spanish background and bringing us to this new book that you have called Feast, Miguel. Life is a feast to you, clearly. How do you want to help people cook with these recipes? You've collated, what, about 100 recipes. Are they aimed for these big sharing meals? Is that what it's about?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it couldn't be. You see, in life, timing is amazing, right? And it couldn't be a better timing in our lives to start sharing again after all these we went through as Australians. Like, this is going to be the best time ever for sitting in a table and, okay, you know, sharing with the people we love the most. And, you know, it's a compilation of my life in the living room, pretty much all the producers, the farmers, the chefs I cook with, you know, the people, all these like stories I do every Friday night. I'm kind of, you know, putting them in a book with my favorite choices of them to get Australian families to enjoy, you know, cooking, you know, my pancetta or making, you know, the barramundi or cooking that delicious pavlova. All these amazing dishes that I've learned over the 500 living rooms I have done. These are almost my 100 favorite ones, the way I see Australian cooking. Because all my previous books, they all be very focused in Spanish and my roots, where I grew up. But this is my Australian meal. You know, this is, you know, it's a Vietnamese influence, it's Thai influence, you know, it's French, Italian, you know, it's the flavors of Australia. You know, it's so many things all colliding in these chapters of a lot of fun recipes. And I hope, you know, families are going to enjoy as much as I do.
When I was flicking through your book, Miguel, I picked that up as well, that these recipes very much reflect the way Australians cook and eat. We are a multicultural society, and one night it may be Thai, one night it may be Italian, and then Japanese another night. We're unusual that way compared to most countries. We eat across a lot of different cuisines.
And you're so right, but we, you know, the best in Australia is like, you can go to countries, you can go to Spain, right? And you will go to a Chinese restaurant or to a French restaurant or to an Italian restaurant, and you will not get that really authentic feel, because still Spanish food is so powerful amongst all of them. But you're in Australia, it's amazing. You can have the best Japanese food. yeah, have the best Chinese food. You got, because there's so many of us that have come from other countries and it's enriched the culture of this amazing boiling pot of beautiful flavors from the world. And you could have some of the best Chinese, even if you were in China, or you could have the best Italian, even if you were in Italy. You know, you could have the best Spanish, like the same way you were in Spain. But imagine all cooked with the best ingredients. Because in Australia, tomatoes from Queensland, oh my God. Like, tomatoes from Queensland, they're better than any tomatoes in the world. Mm. Or, you know, a barramundi from the Northern Territory. Oh, my God. Oh, beautiful, you know. I could not stop, like, talking about how amazing our produce is. So, a lobster from Tasmania. Oh, my God. You know, like, so it's, imagine all these beautiful ingredients that we have here with the best cuisines of the world. It's so nice to go and mix it up. Mm. And it's just such a good... Oh, I love it. Monday, yeah. Tuesday, Wednesday. It's not enough days of the week. Sometimes I think we need like another 4 more days in a week. It should be 10 days in a week.
We are certainly spoilt with a lot of wonderful produce in Australia. And yes, I agree with you. A lot of us are appreciating the fact that, you know, we have this produce. We haven't been able to share it with our friends and family. Hopefully over the next couple of months now we're going to have those big get-togethers where we can get some of the recipes from your book, which will be exciting. In terms of how you've looked at these dishes, now for some people they can be quite intimidated when they have to cook for a crowd of 10 or 12 when we have been used to only cooking for one or two people over the last couple of years probably. So how do you go about it, Miguel, when you're planning a menu for cooking for 8 or 10 people?
See, the thing is, make the food become their entertainment. You know, the problem that we have, and that's exactly what everybody tells me. Like, I can tell you, every day somebody tells me, Miguel, I'm freaking out. I got a dinner for 10. Somebody called me, what should I do, Miguel? Just make the food to become the entertainment. Because if we are stressing to 10 people sitting down and service them, we would not have fun. And that's the biggest stress of every person, you know, bringing 10 people for dinner.
Yeah.
Do I have the entree ready? Is the cheese plate ready? The crackers, should I get them out now? Oh my God, what am I cooking? Is the steak resting? Oh my God, this steak to cook for 2 hours. Should I have it ready? All these things. We need to make the food the entertainment. And the thing, the way it works, is just get people to be involved. When I invite people for dinner, I got everyone working. I don't get one person sitting down there and waiting for the main course. No. I made the food entertainment. For example, I put an example. The paella is a great example. So if I put the paella in the middle, I don't cook the paella before you arrive. I'll wait until you arrive. I'll give you a spoon. I get the sofrito. And we talk about what ingredients were in the sofrito. I get somebody get the salt. Somebody else grab the paprika. Another person get the chicken. And I get that paella pan to be in the center. Hot,
yeah, so you make the food part of the entertainment.
So the stress is off. Mm. All bets are off. You don't have the stress. Everyone is having a good time. And what you need to make sure is keep that glasses really nice and full.
I can hear you slapping your hands like you're getting ready to have a party already. Yeah. Oh, that's actually a really good tip. It's a good tip, isn't it, to try to take that stress away, because really it's just about enjoying each other's company. The food is important, but not as important as the company, right?
Yeah, and sometimes we get caught up, and it's everyone. Everyone get caught up in that stress. Sometimes we don't even have that many people where we are scared of, we won't be able to cater for them. And, you know, forget about that. Let's forget about that. And let's just make the food entertaining.
All right. Well, Miguel, in our segment Eat Out In, we ask all the chefs and cooks that we have on the show to share one of their favourite recipes from their book or from their collection of favourite dishes that they think we could replicate at home. We've got an amazing array of chefs we've talked to, from Rene Redzepi to Maggie Beer, to Jamie Oliver, to Yotam Ottolenghi, and they've all shared recipes with us that you can find on the Nightlife website. There's some delicious ones there. The roast chicken, Rene Redzepi, I'm telling you, Miguel, is probably the best roast chicken I've ever had. It's just exquisite and so simple. And you think we've had roast chicken so many different ways, but just a few touches that he brings to it lifts it. So really recommend take a look at those recipes. So we're really looking forward to hearing what recipe you're going to share with us.
Oh my God, I'm going straight to the website.
Yeah.
Don't worry about my recipe. I'm going to your website right now. I think for me, and to just keep it original to the origins, I think the paella should be the you know, like, I love to share the idea of a paella with everyone. And the funniest thing is, in this book, I manage, and I'm happy to give you the three versions I have in the book, because, you know, I managed to have the three different ways I see the paella. And I can explain a little bit. So we got the Australian way, because in Australia, we are in love with chicken and chorizo. Mm. You know, chicken and chorizo is our favorite combination, but that's not very traditional, right, in Spain. So I call it the paella the Australian way.
Right.
And after, I have another one that is the Spanish authentic one. And this is very authentic. But I'm not sure it will jingle the bells of many Australians, because it's got rabbit and snails.
Mm.
And I don't know if Aussies, you know, we have a few snails in the French cuisine, and maybe in Croatian and a little bit of Middle Eastern, the rabbit is a few recipes, but we've never been big in rabbit. That's why the Easter bunny doesn't stop in Spain.
I love rabbit, but where would you source snails, farmed snails in Australia? Are they easy to come by?
No, they're actually almost impossible, but it's a lot of French, it's a lot of little delis, French delis, that they carry the escargot, and you can use the escargot, they're beautiful, they come in a lovely preserve, and you can actually buy the shells as well. Oh, French delis are amazing. They got the shells. So what do you do? You know, when you have the restaurant, you do the escargot, you get the snails and the shells, and you do a little bit of garlic butter. So you put the snails back in the beautiful shells, and you cover them with a little bit of garlic butter, and they look exactly the same as the ones in Spain.
Uh-huh.
I don't recommend it to anybody to go in a mountain and get the snails.
Okay, so rabbit and snail paella, that sounds pretty special.
And that is the Valencian way, the paella valenciana. You know, that's the authentic, real authentic Spanish one. And after I got another one, that is the paella a la maestre, and it's the one I love, and it's with all the seafood, you know, like all the array of different seafoods. So I use scallops, mussels, you know, prawns, fish, you know, and it's really a colorful one. I reckon it's the one in the cover. The paella maestre is the one I use in the front cover of the book. And because it's this, I love that. And Australia, we live in an island, best seafood in the world, amazing. You know, you can go to the Gulf of Carpentaria and have that big, massive prawns, or in Jervis Bay, you have scallops or loligos, baby calamari, or, you know, whatever you look, it's just something beautiful, you know, swordfish, naladala. I'm just telling you, last week I've been buying all the seafood, so just things that come to my memory of delicious seafood.
I mean, that's the wonderful thing about a paella, Miguel, is that you can throw in whatever you've got available and fresh around you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because the origin of paella, it depends where you are in Spain. And this is the beauty of the dish. We think it's like a thing you order in a restaurant. This is like a Monday or Tuesday mama's cooking. You could get a handful of vegetables and make a vegetarian paella. Delicious. Or it depends where you're in Spain. Depends on the produce. You know, where the best produce in that city, that's where the paella has in it. So you're in Alicante, that's the south of Spain, you get the paella with the squid ink because there's a lot of calamari. Or you are, for example, I don't know, in the north of Spain, they got amazing chicken, right? So they use the eggs to do a crust on top. And that's the beautiful diversity of the paella. That is not just one dish. You will get a handful of whatever you have in the fridge with a handful of rice, and lots of love, and that's a paella.
And the perfect dish to feed a crowd.
Oh, and that will take the stress of everything.
Yeah.
And it's colorful, and it's, you know, it's entertaining, and it's scrumptious, and it's got all that Australian things that we love, you know, the family values and all that. Oh, everybody together checking in. And the best thing is, you know, it's the only thing you're allowed to burn a little bit, because when you burn the paella a little bit in the base, that the crust form in the base, and that's called socarrada. And that crust is what is delicious. It's all the caramelization of the flavors.
Yum. Okay. You've sold me.
I'm getting so hungry right now.
You've sold me, Miguel. Thank you so much. It's been so good catching up with you after a long time and sharing your passion for food, for life with us, and those wonderful paella recipes, which will be up on our Nightlife website for everyone to enjoy and share with their family and friends over the next couple of months or so. Miguel, you have a wonderful summer, and I hope our paths cross.
Oh, no, I can't wait. Thank you so much. What an honor to be in the show.
Yeah.
And what a, just a fantastic chat with you. I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Miguel. That's Miguel Maestre, whose new book is called Feast, 100 Generous Recipes to Share. And you can also catch him on Network 10 on The Living Room on Friday nights.
Nightlife with Indira Naidoo on ABC Radio.